I can hold on. I don't care.
Corinna, you sound a little bit. Your mic sounds a little bit hot to me.
How's that?
That sounds better. Yeah.
I like that. Katie is.
I'm producing.
Is gonna audio engineer. Yeah.
I do know the particular nightmare of recording a podcast and then realizing that your mic is hot at the end of it. It's unfixable.
I just remove my track if that happens. Mm-hmm. Or just record another one. Nina hasn't noticed this, but there's been a few episodes where I just re-record all of my dialogue.
I had to do that recently. Not all of it, but like 10 minutes of it. It did not sound good. And I was talking really closely to the mic. And so people were complaining that it was like turned into an ASMR podcast.
We've had really good reviews for our podcast, except for there was one where I actually had the wrong audio input for mine, and so they gave us a 3-star review and then complained to Nina about Nina's audio, and it was actually my, I don't know. It's hard to make people happy. All right, let's get the show on the road. Hello, TERFs and trannies. Oh,
hi,
we keep going, don't we?
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, TERFs and trannies.
Right.
Let's talk over each other the whole episode.
I'm already offended by what I'm hearing on this podcast. I don't know what I agreed to.
Wow. We didn't even introduce you and you're just... Okay. My name is Corinna Cohn. My co-host...
I'm Katie Herzog and I am not happy to be here.
This is just going to be hours and hours of editing now. My co-host is...
Actually, wait, can I say one more?
Yes.
No, sorry. Okay. Right. I'm actually
this is that. What I have to deal with on a regular basis.
Sorry. Your co-host is Nina Paley. I am also the co-host of the Hetero Dorks podcast. I'm about to choke on my hard candy here.
With a Hetero Dorks with an R.
Hetero Dorks.
With an X.
Hetero Dorks. Hetero Docs Dorks.
We have two guest Hetero Dorks with us today. They are
welcome to Blocked and Reported.
This is your supplementary Blocked and Reported B episode with our guests Jesse Single and Katie Herzog, or I should say Katie Herzog and her special assistant Jesse Single.
Thank you.
And absolutely.
Thank you guys for having us.
You might not know either of these. Jesse is a reporter. Katie is also a reporter. They have a little podcast, and we all have one thing in common, which is that I think that we are all wholly exhausted of the gender wars.
So tired, y'all.
Yeah. I mean, Katie's not exhausted. Katie always wants to exacerbate her war on marginalized people. Mm. I'm pulling her back from the brink.
It's not marginalized people. It's only non-binary people. That's my war.
It's been a pretty interesting year so far with all sorts of news stories breaking, or maybe different articles or reports breaking that seem to, I would say, justify some of the earlier reporting that you have both done on the issues of detransitioners, or on the uncertainty around some of the gender reporting. So do you, either of you, have any feelings like I told you so, or ha, take that, or suck it, or anything like that?
Pretty constantly.
Katie is much more of a suck it type. I don't know. I feel like it's pretty clear at this point, like, we weren't wrong to raise these concerns. It's been weird because, like, objectively, multiple European countries have looked at the evidence and said there basically isn't really any high-quality evidence. But so I sort of thought things were trending toward normality, but then there have been a major sort of, I don't know, Katie, how would you describe it? Like, the culture war within journalism is reinvigorated, and it seems like people are... It could just be a last gasp, but they're basically as crazy as ever on this issue.
Well, it's just backlash to backlash to backlash in this weird pendulum with both sides getting more and more extreme. And I definitely include the right on this. This bans of things like drag in Tennessee. And I haven't actually read the bill itself, so I don't know how accurate the reporting is on this. That is one thing, of course, that you will quickly learn covering this issue, is that the reporting is egregious. But let's assume that that is bad for a second, or let's assume that it is accurate for a second, that they're trying to ban drag in public in Tennessee. I think one thing these legislators don't realize is that drag queens are typically gay men. There's this real misconception about what and who is doing drag. There are obviously some trans women who do it, but typically I think it's gay men. And so I think the backlash is really coming for, and you know, you can have complicated feelings on drag. I personally, and it's not an art that I'm particularly interested in, but I do think the backlash is, you know, it's hitting back on gays and lesbians in a way that I think was very predictable.
I read one of the bills, I don't remember for which state, and it did not define drag well. And my concern about it was that it could be interpreted so that anybody who's cross-dressing in
women
public
in pants.
Well, yeah. I mean, it said like flamboyant or something like that, but that's really open to interpretation.
Women in flannel. Yeah.
Well, we need to develop like a scientifically validated instrument for how flamboyant, yes, you're allowed, right, to be in public before a right-wing state governor, you know, takes you to the,
right,
re-education.
Flamboyant.
We'll just know it when we see it.
Yeah. So
yeah, it's right. It's like porn. You know,
so
it.
I know that this is it's not actually a contest, and these things are impossible to quantify. But let's just say for a second that,
yes,
there are two sides to this issue. That there's a blue side and a red side, or a left and a right. Who is crazier? Who is acting crazier?
I'd have to say the Democrats are acting crazier on this. I'm sorry. I mean, I realize that the backlash is ill-conceived, but the Dems are being more nuts for sure.
I don't know that there are stupider hills to fight and die over, which it started with for whatever reason. I get that it's supposed to be subversive, but having a man dressed up in very outlandish sexualized clothing to read books to children is, it really makes you wonder like what the social purpose of it is, right? Like when somebody said, hey, I have this idea. And if the idea is, oh, it's so that we can help accept gays and lesbians in public life, there's no, like, you don't go to work most places outside of maybe a drag club where your colleagues or your friends are dressed up in highly sexualized clothing and doing pantomimes of the opposite, mm-hmm, sex. And I'm not sure what we're acclimating children to by having them have drag queens read to them.
Yeah, so this drag queen story hour started in San Francisco in 2015. It was started by Michelle T, who used to be a dyke. I'm sure she doesn't call herself a dyke anymore. She's married to a trans man, very, you know, queer. And I think for me, like when I, you know, I was involved in a queer scene like Michelle T's. I actually brought her when I was living in Durham. I brought her to Durham to do an event there. And so in those circles, in these small subcultures, that would have been like a little bit transgressive, but not too transgressive. It would be more about, I think, you know, really, really a family friendly event. But that when that creeps out of this, you know, the queer scene in San Francisco into the wider world without all of the context and the history, then of course it looks absolutely insane to normal people. And I think that's what's happening frequently is subcultural values leaking out into the mainstream and the mainstream reacting in some cases appropriately, in some cases going absolutely crazy about it.
But why is it being embraced by, for example, all of the liberal moms?
I think they want to, part of it, I think, is because of the backlash, because they want to show that they're good allies. And so when you have...
It's negative part,
right,
of it.
Right, it's, yeah, common, yeah, enemy politics.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, right.
And so even if like they would never take their kid to see a stripper read a storybook, which would be bizarre. Like a woman doing the same thing would be strange, right? Just a natal female wearing outlandish clothes would be sort of weird, depending on the outfit. But, you know, this is a way of signaling that you're a good ally.
I have a different take. I think Drag Queen Story Hour isn't sexually explicit enough, but we don't have to go into that now.
Yeah.
What would you add, Jesse?
Just like more nudity, more sort of explicit sex acts. The kids are going to have to learn at some point. Anyway,
maybe they should read erotica as well.
And, mm-hmm, act it out, yeah, for the kids.
Sort of a Kama Sutra.
No, I don't know. It's sort of like a buzzword among like political commentators now, but I think the negative partisanship thing is huge because like it really is the case more and more that we identify more with like what we're against and with those evil guys on the other side. I don't know. Anecdotally, I know a huge number of people who will always vote Democrat but don't really like the party, and they're much more reacting to Trump or DeSantis or whatever than to their own side's perceived values.
Hey, speaking of that, a couple years ago, I remember listening to Blockton reported, and you were urging people to vote for Biden because Trump derangement syndrome was so bad and that this would calm everything down. Was that borne out in your opinion?
I think so.
People yeah. got mad. I went on, I talked to Brett Weinstein and James Lindsay, and people claim that it wasn't borne out. I would just maintain that if Trump had been elected, things would have been yeah. much worse. Like, however stupid you think things are, I think the number of like individual people I know in journalism who have had their brains have just melted as a result of Trump, and they're like unrecognizable intellectually from what they were before. Like, setting aside my own strong preference for a Democrat over Republican, I think that just would have, I actually think we'd be in a crazier time now.
I think so as well. I think the race stuff has calmed down a lot. Not because Biden is an anti-racist president. Part of it is also just things change, movements move. But, you know, and this is one of my, why my primary critiques of this sort of gender critical way of voting would be if your number one issue is that the president can define the word woman, you're going to be voting for a party that is going to outlaw abortion. And to me, that's just a much bigger deal. Access to things like abortion is a much bigger yeah. deal than any of the trans stuff. So I think we just, as much as we talk about it and care about it, I think when it comes down to it, environmental policy, foreign policy, I don't think Democrats are much better than Republicans. But on a lot of domestic issues, policy issues, I think the Democrats are better. Although I do want lower taxes on podcasters in particular, so I might change my mind about that.
Definitely.
I don't affiliate with the Democrats or the Republicans. Give me a nice pot-smoking libertarian. That'll be exciting.
Yeah, if libertarians, if I agree with libertarians on a lot of social stuff. If libertarians had a viable, non-crazy candidate, I would consider voting for a libertarian. I don't think they have fielded one in the last 4 years.
Or if they could just like abandon yeah. half of their beliefs, like about like healthcare and education stuff, while maintaining like the open-mindedness toward disagreement and free speech. Or if they could point to like one country where everything's privatized and it works well. So yeah, but yeah, they're more fun to drink with, and they absolutely. Do more drugs and stuff.
My understanding, sure. Saudi Arabia is sort of like that, isn't it?
that's where I want to live.
Yeah.
I've been trying to emigrate there, but there's been some paperwork issues.
My understanding is that most Republicans actually support abortion.
They do. Rights. It's the politicians who don't.
Yeah.
And the politicians are just as Democrats are out of step with voters on things like, or not all Democrats, of course, but the farthest left wing of the party is out of step with Democrats on things like funding for the police. Republicans are out of step with their own voters. They are, both sides have been taken over by the most extreme section of their voters, the loudest, and the people who are willing to sink the most energy into it. And this is not proving to be a good electoral strategy for them. I mean, look at just what just happened in Wisconsin. They're totally out of step with voters, but you can't, you know, there's no there's no chance to vote on a national platform. You just have to vote for the people who are running, or not vote at all, which I'm warming to more and more.
Do you have any predictions for what the top issues for the 2024 election will include?
Trans stuff.
What?
Drag queen story. If Ron DeSantis, if Trump is the nominee, Trump's innocence. If DeSantis is the nominee, men dressed as women reading to kids. It's going to be so stupid. I'm already looking forward to just, Katie, can we just make a pact right now that we'll mostly disagree, ignore the election on the podcast? Yeah. It's such a luxury to not have to talk or write about like national politics.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if DeSantis is the nominee, I think Democrats are going to be more in trouble. I think that he's more electable than Trump is. And on this culture war stuff, it is weird. I haven't read this, but Helen, because it's paywall, but Helen Lewis wrote a piece in The Atlantic about visiting Florida. And I just read the sort of the introductory paragraph, and she started out saying, you know, talking about this contrast between the idea of the Florida man, the sort of libertarian in many ways, compared to what's actually happening in politics there, which is pretty fucking puritanical under Ron DeSantis.
So Corinna, you know that Corinna's been traveling about testifying in favor of state laws banning medical interventions for trans-identified minors. Do you have any thoughts on those bills?
I think it really depends on the bill. Like, what are bills that you think are good versus bills that you think are bad, Corinna?
I don't know that there's one that I would consider perfect at this point, but the mechanism that I like the best right now is the one that says, doctors, you can't perform these certain procedures, particularly the surgeries, but maybe the medicalization or the hormones as well. And if you do, then anybody that you provide these services to has a private right of action for up to 20 years after the age of majority. And that really puts a lot of the enforcement into the hands of the people who are being affected by it. I know that there are some other bills that go a little further that allow the Attorney General to step in, and I don't know what the Attorney General can do, but maybe bring complaints on behalf of the patients to the medical board for providing those procedures anyway. But again, being brought before your medical board is a fairly light punishment as compared to being thrown in jail for it. So the things that empower the patients a little bit more and keep the police officers out of it are the ones that I am tending to support.
Are there ones that you think go too far and that you wouldn't testify in support of?
That's a really interesting question. There were a couple of competing bills in Texas, and one of them was a lot stronger in its measures. And I think, I don't know if I'm just justifying this to myself, but I think that by building a little coalition of parents and people who've been through the medicalization process to work to put the balance or the weight on the bill that was less punishing, I think that was probably a good thing to do in Texas. It was sort of a horse race up to that point. I don't mean to excite anybody by... Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what the status... I haven't looked into this myself. Does anybody know what the status of that that thing that Abbott signed last year? I guess this wasn't a bill, maybe some sort of executive action that would have allowed social services to take kids from families. I assume that did not hold up in any sort of court, but do you know the status of that one?
Was the state sued and it's pending? I don't know the current status.
I mean, that to me is throwing doctors in jail for following medical guidelines, which all four of us on this chat could agree that guidelines are wrong, but throwing clinicians in jail for following them. And I think most clinicians probably don't even realize that the guidelines are not in line with actual evidence, and taking kids from parents. Yeah. To me, those are such immoral positions to take. I don't find them defensible, even if the guidelines are wrong, and we can agree that they are. And so to me, a better tactic is to change the guidelines, you know, try to recapture these organizations from the hardline activists. Of course, that is impossible, and that can't be done from the outside. That can't be done by Texas politicians. It has to be an inner or sort of an intra-organization movement.
Jesse might know this. I don't know if you do or not, though, Katie. You know, most of the clinicians don't work by the WPATH standard of care.
Yeah, they follow what, AMA or APA?
No.
I don't know if they follow anything. I mean, what do they? It really. Well, what were you going to say, Chris?
That's it. They don't follow any of the guidelines. I've spoken with any number of clinicians from different states now who all say that the WPATH guidelines are too conservative, and that they don't want their patients having to go through a year of psychotherapy before having access to any of the medicalization procedures. And there, some of them have been quoted in the media saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. So there's this very popular viewpoint. Oh, these guidelines exist. Everybody is following the guidelines when they're working with kids. And that's just not true at all.
A lot of the time, also, if you read the guidelines, they don't really provide concrete advice on what to do in complex situations. And as other people have pointed out, they're political documents. They're not like a systematic evidence review with a clear method for determining what we know and what we don't know about the question. So a lot of the guidelines talk I just find stupid, and it often comes from folks who haven't read the guidelines and don't understand the extent to which they, for example, reference the Dutch data, which comes from a very different setting and is itself quite flawed. So yeah, I don't know. It's just been sort of infuriating watching so many outlets and scientists themselves pretend that this is settled science, given what's at stake. I wish they would act more responsibly, but they won't.
Jesse, a couple of years ago, you published a book called The Quick Fix. I think I have that right.
I've never heard of it.
No.
The Quick Fix, Why Fad Psychology Can't Cure Our Social Ills.
Right. I wanted to ask you, it was just in my head. There's this theory that the reason why people who are in these marginalized communities have such high amounts of mental illness or other problems is because...
The word you're looking for is...
Something threat.
I probably just talked over you as you were about to... Basically, any mental health comorbidities can be explained by societal stigma and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I mean... I think it's an oversimplification. And what worries me is you see this like very closed sort of thinking where if someone goes on these treatments and they feel better, that's because of the treatments. If they don't feel better, that doesn't mean the treatments failed. It's because other external factors came in, usually like transphobia. So right. I just think we need to be honest about, I don't know, scientifically, it's actually very hard to prove a treatment works and you need to have an open mind about it. But the idea that any negative feelings members of these communities experience are just because of like stigma and prejudice, I don't think that's accurate. I think that's part of it. But I think, I don't know, my understanding is like, especially the kids coming into trans clinics today have a lot of really serious mental health problems. And a lot of them are actually in communities where their identity is very much validated and accepted, although some aren't. So it's complicated. That's always my catchphrase.
Yeah. I think it's called the minority stress model.
Minority stress. Yes, that's exactly it. Right. Yeah.
It has seemed to me in the past few weeks, in spite of having a brain fog from COVID, that trans activism in general has gotten to another level of crazy in general than it's been at. So right now, gender criticals are referring to a lot of these people as terrorists, and not without reason. I think what happened to Riley Gaines at San Francisco State University was bonkers. I think what happened at wherever it was in New Zealand to Posey Parker was pretty scary. And this all seems to stem from a kind of persecution complex that's built into trans activism as we know it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you're right. It is crazy. I think that it's not actually, and I'm sure you've seen this yourself, Nina, that this isn't actually that new. The difference now is that people are paying attention. So when, I don't remember the name of the woman, but there is the woman in the UK, the older woman.
McLaughlin. Yeah. No, I mean, they've been violent this whole time, but on this scale and having police just, well, I guess that was true in the UK before, but that was before the Maria McLaughlin happened before it really became Turf Island. Mm-hmm. So that's sort right. of been resolved, but it's happening on such a bigger scale with so few repercussions for the participants.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, part of this is probably, I mean, you were just talking about minority stress. This, I think that their trans activists now have greater reason to feel threatened because of these bills, which of course they're not reading the bills. Some of the bills are probably, I would agree with, some I would not agree with. But it's become much more of a big national story. And when you turn on the news or you open Twitter and it says 19 states have passed anti-trans bills this year, whatever the number is, that's going to make people feel more threatened and they're going to act accordingly. Is it right? No. And that statement that, besides what happened to Riley Gaines being attacked, but the statement that the, I don't know who it was, the chancellor at the university in San Francisco, UCSF or wherever it was, the statement that the guy put out was egregiously. Jesse, did you see this?
Yeah, she was basically... I've sort of been off Twitter, but she was basically kidnapped and assaulted. But this statement didn't reference any of the stuff that had happened. It basically like it almost mm-hmm. lauded the students for like dealing with difficulty.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
It was absolutely egregious. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how, if any of this is picked up by the left media. I would doubt that it will be. you know, this will be a major story on the right, and left media probably won't touch it at all. Or if they do, it will be about, you know, this, these brave students sticking it to the TERS.
Everybody is supporting this narrative that's just not true, which is that there's a trans genocide and mm-hmm. people hate trans and want trans to die. And
right.
And then like they believe it, which makes them crazy. They're already crazy. Why do the supposed, you know, the media and the administrators and whatnot, they keep amping it up? It's like they,
yeah, they, I think they believe it. You know, they're absorbing the same media that puts out a false message, media about trans genocide and things like that, which is not, if you look at the numbers, it's just, it's not reality. Yeah, it's all very strange.
There's also a meme that's taken hold that it's like, if you disagree with any of my beliefs on any of this, including like pretty specific policy questions that need to be hashed out one way or another, you want me dead or you're questioning my right to live. And I don't know. I think some people know that's not true, but keep saying it. But there's also like a small army of like, you know, people, randos, like both activists who show up at these protests and people online who I think have internalized the message that the people who disagree with them want them dead or can really do them harm by invalidating their identity. And I think that might explain how I do think it's a small minority of the of activists who actually engage in the worst stuff, but that could explain it. I think some of them actually think somehow their lives are on the line, whether or not someone gets to speak about Leah Thomas.
Of course they think this. This is the message that has been spread for years now. And if you look at, I was looking the other day at some recent polling, Gallup polling on trans issues. And you remember in, 2016 when North Carolina was trying to pass that bathroom bill?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did not go well. Extremely unpopular, even among Republicans. And part of that was because corporations took their money and went home. You know, artists stopped playing, like Bruce Springsteen said he wasn't going to North Carolina. NASCAR got involved in it, I believe. It was this real backlash against that bill. And if you look at polling now, support for bathroom bills has gone up. That is not typically how trends go on civil rights issues. But I think a big part of that is because of activism. And this is going to be bad for everyday regular trans people who are not crazy, because activists. Yeah,
both of us.
You and who else, Buck?
Buck and I. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like things like the sports thing. Why any activist have ever thought that this was a hill to die on? The idea that natal males should be playing in women's sports. Why? I still do not understand why this was the issue that they decided was the next civil rights front. It was always going to be a loser issue. And the backlash is coming and it's real.
Those men who are playing in women's sports, I think that they should be thrown in prison.
This is where your pro-carceral instincts kick in.
They do. Women's
prison.
Just
drag them right off the soccer field.
Yeah. No, yeah. No.
Yeah, okay. Right. I'm consistent in my beliefs, at least.
I've been trying to like go back channels with any of the activists who will talk to me. I've had quite a few of them block me. I don't know if you've remember my old friend Alejandra Caraballo.
Mm-hmm.
Class act.
Class act.
Really nice person.
We messaged back and forth for a few months in 2022, and the whole time I'm like, can you please, like, this is the time. Can you get Democrats to participate? Because if they do, it will blunt the Republicans' ability to run on this issue. If there's some sort of compromise, if both parties are talking about these issues, and even if the Democrats are saying, well, we need to make sure that issues about equity and fairness are here for everybody. And if the Republicans want to take the more moral stand about right and wrong, and if they have different ways of talking about it, fine. But if the Democrats just completely turn their back on this, the Republicans are going to completely own the issue. Will you please get your friends to take this up in a way that steals some of the wind out of the Republican sails? A couple activists I talked to, I could not convince anybody that that was something that was worth doing.
Well,
But that's because that would destroy their own standing in their community if they adopted a more nuanced stance. I mean, that's the same reason why I don't really think you see anyone just making the most milquetoast statement, hey, don't assault people, don't kidnap people. It's fine to protest and be loud and even be disruptive, but they won't even say that because, like, even the, I don't know, and this isn't just trans, like, any radical online community, if you deviate at all or suggest any moderation, it's over. Your standing is ruined.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jesse, and it's very frustrating because I feel like a Cassandra in a lot of ways. I've seen all of this from years ago, and I know that there are ways that can, like, things people can actually do to head this off, but nobody is doing the things that could have been possible to stop this moment from happening. And I don't know. I feel like it's all futile.
So what's going to happen? What do you think is going to happen in the next, let's say, 6 months? Because things are coming to a head, right? Like, there's more and more violent conflicts.
I mean, there's, like, on some, I don't know, the Biden administration, my understanding is they just said high school sports associations can sort of do what they want on this issue, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. So I've always felt like there's some issues like the sports thing where it's just when the rubber meets the road, you're not going to have self-ID in high school sports. Like, Americans...
Well, you will. I mean,
Americans
in some places you will, because, yeah.
I'm saying that's just not... It's not sustainable, yeah. And it won't last. And the sorts of negative publicity brought on by, like, a Leah Thomas thing, it's just not going to work. It's like... So I don't know. I've always thought that would sort itself out. The medicalization thing, I think that our culture wars are so bad and so toxic that whereas all these European countries are at least taking a more evidence-based approach, because in the US, because of, like, our federalist system where, like, states can have totally different standards on this, I just think, like, the craziness is only going to get worse, and it's going to take us years and years and years to realize that this is, like, at this point, I don't know. I used to, like, chide people for calling it experimental, but if you actually look at the data and then look at the protocols in, like, often in place here, I don't know how you could not call it experimental. So I don't know. I'm rambling, but I think, like, a lot of these things like sports, I think will just work themselves out because it's sort of clear to everyone there has to be some compromise. That the medical stuff, I'm really worried, is just going to go completely off the rails in both directions.
At some point in the next year, a year and a half, somebody is going to ask Joe Biden what a woman is. And I don't know if they'll be able to answer. Like, he'll be like, you know, the one who finds the keys or whatever, the one who reads the map.
I'm not a biologist.
He might not even be aware. That's the thing. Joe Biden is not woke. You know, he might not even be aware, depending on what.
Nobody has woke people in his administration. One of the first things
he does, but whether he remembers what they to repeat whatever they put in his ear is another question.
So setting the specific trans policies aside for a second, I would be willing to take a loss on most of these policies, maybe all of them, if I had any sort of confidence that I could trade that for there being better media coverage of just anything, if there were fewer attacks happening on free speech, if I could shore those up somehow, if the internet platforms that we tend to use to talk about these ideas would stop tampering with things so as to make it difficult for people to talk to one another. Like, there are so many things happening on the free expression front and maybe the free speech front that I feel like in some ways the gender stuff is almost a distraction. The state of the media right now, I think, is deplorable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the gender stuff really is a... Perhaps it's a proxy for what else is going on. Although, you know, now we have the biggest offender. Elon Musk has censored the TERF platform Substack. That was unexpected. Yeah, exactly. He finally did what GLAAD has been asking for.
Was it only 2 years ago that the commentators on the left were saying that Substack is a alt-right Nazi platform? Dude, and
that was incredible. Mm-hmm. Partly because a lot of them went to Ghost, which has less moderation, and partly because a lot of them, I think, were just mad because they can't keep up a successful newsletter, which requires actually writing regularly and coming up with original things. That was one of the most low-key strange blow-ups I've ever seen. Substack is problematic. Anyway, I do think a lot of the media stuff's getting better. Like, I'm sorry, the Times coverage has gotten better of this and other issues. They hired Michael Powell, who's like a good free speech bro. They hiled Hitler, which is great.
Very liberal. They
hired John McWhorter. Right-wing dog whistle, Jesse.
Michael Powell, though, he's not new, exactly. Is he, Jesse?
He's not new, but they switched his beat to like these. The only reason we know the details of some of the craziest blow-ups is because Michael Powell covers them. I do think some other outlets, like lefty outlets, have gotten even crazier, but I don't know. I see the space for like reasonable discourse expanding. I think like at the end of the day, markets are going to win out. And when folks see how successful like the top flight Substack bros like Iglesias, Sullivan, Barry Weiss have been, there's a market for like actual reasoned conversation. So I'm overall hopeful. I do think there's going to be some last crazy gas.
Well, and when you read it's always interesting to read the comments on the New York Times articles about this stuff.
Yeah.
And the reader's choice, the reader's picks comments are always way more sane than anything that you would read probably in most lefty outlets, maybe the Times being accepted. And surely the editors are also reading those, you know, Unfortunately for Jesse, he has more competition on the science beat now. There are more people willing to actually look at it. The Economist just had a big, I think it was a cover story about this, although they don't publish bylines, so we don't know who to yell at on Twitter, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there are the coverage of the science, at least, I think has gotten better in the last few years. There's more people doing it. The consequences, like there are still consequences, obviously. Look at what happened at the New York Times with this open letter condemning these reporters for wrongthink. But if this had happened in 2020, they might have been fired or forced to quit. So I think we will look back at 2020 as sort of the fever pitch of the craziness and the institutional capture, at least in the media.
Are you familiar with what happened to me with Indiegogo? That kind of thing really concerns me. I mean, we get booted from all kinds of platforms. I'm just waiting for the day that PayPal boots me the way they did Colin Wright.
Yeah. Yeah. Colin, did Colin contest that? Somebody was looking into this and they're and they didn't ever reinstate his account. But still, I mean, there's less censorship on Twitter than there was. I think Twitter has actually gotten legitimately worse since Elon Musk took over the For You tab. My For You tab, which I wish didn't exist, is just conflict over conflict over conflict. It seems like the temperature has raised a lot. But you can say that men aren't women. Mm-hmm. You can't post a Substack link saying that men are women, but you can say that men aren't women. Mm-hmm.
There's just no accountability in any of these structures. So when we talk about things working themselves out and the market working, this is one of those things where it's like, I don't really think the market's going to work without some consumer protections or user protections. Like companies have unaccountable trust and safety teams just making unaccountable decisions.
Have other companies emerged to meet these needs?
Only one, which is a Christian crowdfunder called GiveSendGo, which I have used for a project. Yeah. And one of the benefits of using GiveSendGo is that after a few weeks, somebody calls you up and offers to pray for you and do your campaign. Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, it's nice. It's sweet.
If you did like a pro-abortion thing on GiveSendGo, would they leave that up? Is it truly free speech?
A pro-abortion thing? I don't know.
Fetuses.
Katie, should we try that? Should we raise money to give people abortions?
Just us.
At random?
You and I will get our abortions.
I want one.
Yeah. Abortions for all.
But no, I mean, and also GiveSendGo, their tools are very primitive compared to these other platforms. So I am not aware of anybody filling this gap. I'm not aware of any financial institution online rushing in to fill this. And I don't think anybody is going to fill it unless there are protections, unless there's some sort of regulation, because why would they not want the same freedom to do any capricious bullshit that they want that the other companies have?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure the banking system makes it more complicated as well.
So I wanted to turn the conversation briefly to something that's been on my mind quite a lot. Jesse, how come your pizzas, you haven't posted in a while because you've been off Twitter, but when you post the food that you make, it just doesn't look very appetizing. And partly I think it's because there's no meat on your pizza.
I mean, you're letting me off easy. A lot of the pizzas are not aesthetically appealing. This is weirdly something like people who don't like me will make fun of how the pizzas look. My honest answer is A, they usually taste good. And when they don't, I'm transparent about that fact. B, I suck at cooking and I want to normalize people trying to cook even though they suck at it. And if you can get yourself to the point where you can make pizza dough from scratch and bread dough from scratch, which does not require a lot of effort, but which took me years to realize I could do, it's very satisfying to like eat a pizza where you made everything from scratch except for the cheese. So I stand by my ugly little pizza babies and I don't think they should be.
I also make pizza from scratch, Jesse, but I have not seen pictures of your pizzas.
Dude, I switched. I stopped making pizzas because my oven doesn't get so hot. This is boring, but I started making Sicilian ones, which require lower heat. And they're so beautiful because it's like molded for you. You don't have to worry about the shape, but they're, yeah.
Are you what Italian?
Do you have like an oven? I'm not.
We're both Jewish.
Okay.
So, although we think we might have got our, yeah, go ahead.
They don't have Jews in any.
No, I just.
Is it a hate crime what I'm doing?
No, it's just appropriation.
Jesse was going to ask an important question about my pizza.
Nina, I was going to ask your setup and how hot your oven gets and what.
All right, 450 degree oven. I also use these perforated pans, which work great.
Okay.
And I do the overnight fermented dough. It's usually better if it goes for 2 days.
Yeah, I do like the 48 to 72 hour ones that.
And then, just in case you ever want to make this, I use homemade pesto. Goat cheese, pecans.
Wow.
Yeah, you're cringing.
I don't like goat cheese. Everything else on that
oven roasted tomatoes.
That sounds awesome.
What else do I put on that? Scallions.
Transphobia.
Oh, right. And then just some like random cheese, whatever's sitting around, whether it's cheddar or whatever.
That sounds really good. You should post pictures of it.
Yeah, I've got pictures of it somewhere. So good. Oh my God. All right. We've covered that, Karenna. That was what you.
All
that's
important
what you really
issues.
Wanted to talk about.
Exactly.
Mostly, Katie, do you make pizza?
I don't, but I have a spouse who does, who is quite the, she's a pretty incredible baker. So I have access to fresh pizza and fresh bread on a daily basis.
Your
so
spouse,
even better.
Your spouse sounds like a goddess. She sounds
she
like
is.
This, like.
Yeah.
She really, yeah.
She is.
She's so much better than Katie.
Yeah, but so she is much better than me in every respect, but she doesn't have a podcast, so.
I have a podcast, but no spouse, is what I was going to say. Krenner and I just have to talk at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've been looking for a straight woman to be your spouse, though, Nina.
To be my domestic partner.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's slightly different than spouse.
Roommate.
Domestic partner. More than a roommate. Literally a domestic partner, where you are in a domestic partnership.
Yeah, get the benefits.
About your domesticity, you household together.
I don't know if I could do that because I can stand to be around basically one person. Mm-hmm. And that's only the person I married. I found the one person who doesn't annoy me badly enough to run screaming from the house. So I don't think that would work for me.
Well, I mean, yeah, so you found that person. I can't do that because I'm heterosexual. And I can't have a man in the house, so that's just never going to work. But if I want,
I didn't
actually...
realize you were heterosexual. I'm actually surprised to hear that. I have to go turn off a heater. I'm sorry. I'll be right back. It just got really loud in here.
Yeah. So another guest thinks I'm a butch lesbian. Karina is like cracking up. But
is that a common?
Yeah. Well, so we had who was the first one? Kate Bornstein said I was a butch.
Kate Bornstein, right?
Dyke, and then. Buck Angel said I was a butch lesbian. And now Katie Herzog.
Yeah. Wait, are you really heterosexual?
I'm post-sexual.
Okay.
But when asexual. I was, when I, not asexual, that's, there's no way I could say that. But when I was sexual, I was very much heterosexual.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that you were a lesbian.
See, you, Kate Bornstein, and Buck Angel.
Yeah.
But you don't think I'm butch, right? Like, you don't look at me and go, butch lesbian. Or maybe you do. It's fine
if you do. I think that you have butch energy. If I were going to put you on a spectrum, I would put you further on the butch spectrum than the femme spectrum.
I mean, I'm flattered by that because I have, for my entire life, I wished that I were a lesbian, which is why we know that sexual orientation is not a choice.
Yeah.
Now that I'm post-sexual, it's like, oh, in terms of actual relationship that I have that's not sexual, it's like I don't have to be with men now because I have absolutely no reason to do that. But I'm not sexual, right? Like I don't want a woman for sex. I want a woman for, like, you know, taking turns cooking dinner.
Yeah. Well, so I think that most women, this is probably a problematic thing to say, but I think most post-sexual women, if you saw them on the street, I would guess were lesbians. Part of it's the style, you know. And then
there's a real style. We're very into our style, cultivating.
Yeah. Fleece tops, short hair, low maintenance, barefaced.
That's also quite a lot of married women here in the Midwest.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
The little Elizabeth Warren button on the sweatshirt.
Yes. Yep. Or a pin. Do you remember that? The safety pins? Are people still doing that?
The safety pins.
Yeah, right. The safety, it was like, it's safe for you to talk to me, but who was it for?
I don't remember.
Was it based on color or?
I don't remember if it was maybe it was like a signal to
Muslims,
people. I can't remember why we were doing safety pins.
I just wear a pin to, like, if any attractive woman wants to just come up and talk to me, I want her to know she'll feel safe. Yeah. She'll be safe. I'm a hero.
You should wear a she/her pin for that.
Yeah, or a pussy hat. You'd look good in a pussy hat, Jesse.
Because no matter how you look, if you just identify yourself as a woman, other women, and maybe just offer tampons on the bus. Mm-hmm. Women feel real safe.
Yeah, I do that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're in New York, though, Jesse, right? So that might actually work.
Yeah, I should go for it.
What sort of projects are you all working on? Like, what's coming up in 2023? Is there... Are you doing more shows together? Do you have more books? Is there going to be anything about mooses, further adventures? Like, what's going on this year?
I'd say mostly more of the same, right? I mean, we want to get back to doing some live shows eventually. That'd be fun, but nothing imminently planned. We have a lot of podcasting.
Yeah, Jesse always has side projects. I don't. I try to work as little as possible. I'm semi-retired, so my last... most ambitious project was trying to become a famous van life influencer, but that only lasted a couple days. So I don't know, maybe I'll buy a boat.
I feel like a lot of your side projects last a couple days.
That's fair.
Where are you talking to us from right now?
My closet. I have a closet studio. I live outside Seattle in a little town, like an hour ferry ride from Seattle. My big thing for the year is that I am I'm doing the garden tour for my neighborhood, so I'm spending a lot of time in the yard. Also, not my project. I'm my job is mostly to kill plants, kill weeds and such. But that's the big plan for the summer is garden tour.
That's the yin and the yang of any healthy relationship. One partner raises and nurtures plants, and the other partner kills plants so they can plant new plants.
Exactly.
And Jesse, any books in the work? Anything like that?
I got some, nothing I can, we'll see, maybe in the long run, but for now, just more podcasting and newslettering.
He's lying.
Oh.
Well, I mean, off mic,
you're projecting.
It's difficult. We can get into that afterward. We turn off the mics.
Yeah. And we'll cut out that part we talked about with your ethnographic survey into adult baby diaper lovers.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had some early exciting preliminary data, but I'm just not prepared to publish it to share.
Should I ask a difficult question now, or should we just quit while we're ahead?
Ooh, let's end with a difficult question.
Okay.
What race is God?
Well, what gender is God? All of them.
All of them. It's a spectrum.
All right. So, are you ever going to change your pronoun policies?
Oh.
No. I mean, I don't have a problem with our policies. I think that I think what people say in the comfort of their own home is different. But I think if you're a public figure and you want to be taken seriously and you don't want people to dismiss what you say because of pronouns. I think it's counterproductive to misgender people, however you want to call it.
See, I think it's the opposite, because when I, and this is something that I realized when I was listening to one of your podcasts, is you were talking about some of the pedophile adjacent abusive moderators of Reddit. And you were saying she. And I believe it, there was like one point for like a second or two, it was like they're trans. So it was like one point you made it clear what the actual thing was. But if I wasn't paying attention, or if I came in the middle, or if I, you know, blew my nose during that second, I would not know what the hell you were talking about. Mm. And so I listened to this whole thing and I was like, what the hell are they talking about? And then I listened to another one and I was like, This is so disrespectful to the listener that just doesn't know what's going on. And so I actually stopped taking you seriously from that, because it's like, I'm a listener. I'm like listening. I'm trying to get a grasp on what's going on. And when they keep referring to men, not just random men, but, you know, some fairly dangerous men, some of whom are pedophilic or involved in rape. I just can't. Like, I can't trust journalists to do this.
Sure. Yeah, but I view it as like a compromise. I mean, part of it. So in those outlying cases involving, it's usually not a case involving a rapist or a pedophile or stuff like that. Those cases are obviously the most difficult ones. Katie and I are not of the view that we've been pretty clear that like self-ID as this mystical thing where as soon as you say something, it is the case, is false. So in the case of like someone like a pedophile, part of it is just it's easier and more convenient. And as long as we're clear about biological sex when it matters, that's sort of the approach that I think allows us to talk about this stuff without dealing with a lot of extra bullshit on top of the bullshit we already deal with. But look, in these situations where like someone's been assaulted at a protest, and then I understand why people would be uncomfortable saying like, yeah, she assaulted her, in cases where it's like a male person. I think there's obviously situations where we need to talk about biological sex. And I think we both view the pronoun policy as like a matter of etiquette and politeness, but not unconditional.
Yeah. I mean, for me, there's also, I want to be consistent. And there's this thing like something like I think I might be wrong about this, because actually I'm not going to say that. So there are certain people in the public eye, commentators, who essentially, and I know you don't do this, Nina, but who will misgender their enemies and correctly gender their friends.
Oh, no, I don't do that. No.
Yeah. And to me, like that doesn't make any sense either. So someone like Buck Angel, I do not find it difficult to call Buck Angel he, him, or whatever, in part because Buck really, really fucking passes, and it's just easier that way. So to me, I can't have a policy where I say I'm going to call, you know, Grace Lavery he, but Buck Angel he as well. So I'll be rude to the people that I dislike and nice to the people I like. I just don't want to do that. To me, it's an inconsistency that just doesn't work. And so to me, the side that I've come down on is, and also because I think it's more politically expedient, is to use people's correct pronouns. Now, do I do that in my private life? No, not always, depending on who we're talking about. If I'm talking about somebody, if I'm shit talking somebody to my wife, am I going to use the correct pronouns? No, not always. And frankly, a lot of it does come down to how well somebody passes, which is a whole other, you know, sort of philosophical conundrum.
It's actually important. Passing is, people have sort of made this decision. It's like, oh, passing, like, we're not going to go there. But actually, passing is of enormous importance. And when you think about the sense that women get of their boundaries being violated, passing,
it's hugely
keeps
important.
That from happening.
Yeah. And there was a case a few years ago where a trans woman, a natal male, was beat up, went into a women's bathroom, and then this person was beat up by a guy outside the bathroom. And I said something on Twitter like, look, obviously you shouldn't beat people up, obviously. However, if you want to protect yourself, you should do everything possible to pass. And of course, I was accused of victim blaming. But that's just, I think it's a courtesy to other people who are going to be in the space with you. And as a means of protecting yourself, don't go, if you are a male, don't go into a women's bathroom looking like a dude in a women's bathroom. It's, you know.
Yeah. So I agree with that. I mean, I'm familiar with all of your reasons for your pronoun policy. I agree that giving people the pronouns they want as a reward if you like them is terrible. I hate it when people do that. I think it's fine. You know, Buck Angel has tripped me up a lot because my stated pronoun policy is just sex-based pronouns across the board. No offense at all. Wait, what? What were you going to say, Corinna?
I thought your pronoun policy, Nina, was to refer to all the trans people as he.
I use sex-based pronouns, but people who pass, who like really, really pass, Buck being among them, they'll trip me up. And so I just go like, all right, I'm tripped up sometimes. I mean, that's, it's like when friends, when mutual friends talk about Corinna, when we're talking about Corinna, some of them say she, some of them say he. And it's like, all right, the world doesn't end when that happens, you know? It's like we're talking about a transsexual and it's like, that's fine.
My job is to create that confusion.
That's right.
How do you feel about it, Corinna? I assume that you don't get you don't feel like your humanity is being denied when your podcast partner refers to you as he. What are your sort of feelings about this?
No, I believe very strongly in people's rights to be able to choose their own words. And if somebody wants to call me he, that's fine. If somebody wants to call me she, that's fine. If somebody gets mad at somebody else because they call me she, I think that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Let people choose their own words and trust them to.
What about they? Would you want people to call you they?
What about it?
It? I don't mind being the it person. I think I've got some it qualities going on here.
See, they bothers the shit out of me. I like people apply that to me all the time.
Are you talking about me?
Yeah, like would you like if I was this actually happened recently. I was talking about you to a friend and they were like I was saying he and my friend was saying she and then my friend started saying they. And I was like
the in between.
We're not supposed to misgender people, right. But they is more and more catching on as the pronoun that you choose for somebody until you hear them state their pronouns, which is so bizarre to me.
Me too. It's like people act as though misgendering is literally denying someone's humanity, that it will put you into some deep depression. And then they default to a pronoun that like 0.04% of the population uses. Yeah. And all of that population is under the age of 40, unless you're like a former lesbian commentator.
But Corinna, haven't you said that you won't call anybody they?
Yeah, I won't call anybody they.
They is one that I like, despite my stated pronoun policy, I have a really hard time calling people they. I'm politically opposed to it. And I make very, very little effort to call people they.
The thing for me is that somebody who uses they, them pronouns, their whole thing is, oh, I don't feel like I'm a woman. I don't feel like I'm a man. And to me, that's really somebody saying, I feel alienated from my sex. I don't feel like I am a member of my sex. And if I call them they because they feel alienated by it, I feel like what I'm saying is, oh, yeah, you should be.
You're validating it.
I'm validating that your feeling of being alienated from your sex category, that you should be validated in that feeling. And I just don't want to do
Wait,
that.
But aren't you, if somebody wants a cross an opposite sex pronoun, they're also expressing alienation from their sex. And wouldn't using that pronoun also be validating that alienation from their sex?
Yeah. So the thing for me is that everybody has a sex. And if you're the case that you're making is I don't have a sex, so don't refer to me as though I do have a sex. You're not just being like you're dehumanizing yourself in a way too, because having a sex is a basic trait of humanity. And to say I don't have that one trait that everybody has, which is that they have a sex, one or the other, except for me. I feel like that's saying, I'm not human, and I don't want to validate somebody's sense of being dehumanized.
You're saying they're saying they're not a mammal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if they're mammal or not. They're just saying I am exempt from this very common thing.
But the whole thing is so like philosophically fuzzy. They would probably say, no, I'm saying I don't have a gender. But then the definition of that will be circular. So it's just we spend a lot of time arguing about stuff where no one's even agreeing on the terms.
And the pronoun itself, I think I would have a lot less conflict about one of these other neo-pronouns, like if Z had been the agreed upon. But they is grammatically confusing, and people like to pretend that it's not, but it is. Yeah. You know, it has the word they has a stated meaning and a standard meaning, and using it singularly is the opposite of that accepted meaning. So I just don't know why that had to be the one that caught on with people. And it's also like the non-binary thing to me, like, I believe that gender dysphoria is real, and I believe that some people it is best treated by transitioning, adopting the physical characteristics of the opposite sex. I believe that. Non-binary, to me, is purely a political designation. And the reason I think that is because there are no conservative NBs. They don't exist. They don't exist. There are conservative trans people, for sure. This is a diagnosis. You know, it's a medical issue. But non-binary, it's purely political, or it's social. And I don't feel like I have a need to respect that the way that I do an actual medical condition.
Didn't you talk to somebody who identified as a conservative?
He identified that way, but he wasn't. He was a libertarian, and he was an outlier in every sense of the word. He was a black guy who listened to Blocked and Reported. That's how much of an outlier he was.
Oh, and wasn't Carlin Borisenko non-binary?
Is she or they? Is she? Does Carlin? I think Carlin's a they.
You're the expert.
But Carlin's
on
also
Carlin
not. Carlin's also libertarian.
Oh.
It makes sense that libertarians would identify as they. They like to be special, but yeah.
All right, Nina. From now on, I want you to call me Corinna, they, them, the libertarian special person.
Nope.
Nope. I do appreciate that you're consistent on this issue, even though I disagree with it. And it would feel, honestly, it would feel rude to me to refer to someone like Corinna as he. It feels a little unkind, but I do appreciate that you have a philosophical reason for doing this and that you're consistent on it.
Well, here's a weird thing. When like I have some good liberal friends who met Corinna recently, and they call Corinna she. And they say, yeah, because Corinna presents as a woman. And I'm just like, Corinna presents as Corinna. I mean, it's like you.
Was it the hoodie or the jeans that really gave the woman presentation?
I don't know. But you know who these friends are. They're.
Yes.
And I didn't ask them about it because we were talking about other things. But it stuck with me. It's like, oh, Corinna presents as a woman. And I'm like, Corinna doesn't wear makeup. Mm-hmm. You know, doesn't femme up, but uses the name Corinna, which is on all his documents. So like that, you know, it's like that's on the documents. So like, what does it even mean that they say that he's presenting as a woman? They seem to have this idea that like Corinna would be doing something differently if Corinna didn't really want to be seen as a woman or something. And I'm like, I don't fully understand what this phenomenon is.
Well, it's a philosophical, I mean, I think this all comes down to lots of philosophical questions and people trying to put other people in categories, which is a very natural thing. Corinna wants to be a woman. Maybe that's why. And I don't know if that's actually how you feel.
I don't think Corinna wants to be a woman.
How do you, would you say that would have been the truth before this, before everything happened?
Yeah. When I was younger, for sure. And even maybe up until more recently, but now I just want my cat to use the cat box and for my taxes to get done and not have to worry about them. Those are the major things now.
Just like
Corinna, in your offline daily life, how aware of your like your colleagues are, not that you're trans, but of your participation in this issue? Do they know that you testify and things like that?
There's some knowledge about that, yeah. And I think I'm glad that I live in the Midwest, which has a very, very much a attitude of let people do their own thing. Like, yeah. it's weird. If you're not a Midwesterner, you might not really get the idea that people that have different points of view can work together without constantly bringing up fraught social issues, and that they can just put all that aside to get things done. But that's how it is here, and I'm very lucky for that. But yeah, some of them are aware, some more than others.
Yeah, I wonder if media outlets in the Midwest also operate on that, with that that ethos, or if it's particular to the field.
You know, I've been completely shut out of the media, and the only times recently that the media has deigned to notice me is to republish a Media Matters for America hit piece that was done on me, calling me a Holocaust denier.
Jesus. Corinna, did the Holocaust happen? I just want to put you on the spot right now.
Well, I mean, there's some evidence that at least several hundred people were put into camps, but, you know,
they were all trans.
I think we should
right?
really.
Wait, are you I take it you're Jewish from your last name?
Yes.
They called you a Holocaust denier?
Well, what happened is I was in a Twitter debate, so this is totally normal. I was in a Twitter debate, and I said there was not a category of people persecuted by the Nazis called, you know, the transgender community. That was not a thing in Nazi Germany. I'm making a statement, which I allege is a statement of fact, because transgender is a term that was pioneered or coined in the late 80s and only took on meaning in the early 2000s broadly. So to say that the thing that we consider the transgender community did not exist in Nazi Germany, I don't think is Holocaust denial, but that is the basis on which I am accused of being a Holocaust denier.
You're denying the trans genocide. There's a trans Holocaust happening right now, and you're denying it.
Yeah, that's what I got in trouble for, is saying that there's not a genocide happening right now.
There's totally a genocide happening right now, as evidenced by me using male pronouns for you.
Yes.
You're denying people's humanity.
I'm genociding Corinna. That's the point of this.
Yeah. So probably what should happen from here is that we should wrap up the episode. I should edit it together, and then I should go put myself into a concentration camp.
That sounds like a just outcome for all involved.
All right. Well, hey, thank you for coming and joining us today.
Yeah,
thank you guys for having us.
Good to see you.
Thank you for listening, TERFs and Trannies.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to Heterodorks. You can support us by visiting our page at anchor.fm/heterodorks or by supporting Nina Paley at patreon.com/Nina Paley. You can also support us by writing a review on your favorite podcast site, such as Apple Podcasts. Thank you.